Thank you very much for letting me share with you my journey. Just before when I came into the meeting, I texted a friend that I know here, and I told this person I'm very nervous. And this person replied to me, "Also remember these people are with you. Look around you, and you will see others who know how you feel." And that brought me some comfort. So what I'd like to do today is I'd like to talk about seven things. The first thing I'm going to talk about is a little bit about my background and the genesis of my recovery. And then I'm going to talk about some disclosure or trigger warnings. And the reason I'm doing that is because I mean absolutely no disrespect to anyone. And I don't feel that I should apologize for my experience, but I've had very negative experiences when I share intimately with people about my recovery. There's nothing graphic or anything like that. The third thing I want to talk to you is about the solution, which we just read. And when I look at the solution, I look at it from a frame of existentialism or stoicism. And then the fourth thing I want to talk about is the meaning of words in recovery. And then I'm going to talk about jumping into the abyss, which for me is about an existential crisis. And then I'm going to talk about Tony A's influence in my recovery. And I'm going to share with you the meaning of his 12 steps for me. So with that, I just wanted to say, I grew up in Caracas, Venezuela, in South America. And yes, I speak Spanish. I also speak Italian. I read Greek and I read Hebrew and I understand French. So, and the reason I say that is I moved to the United States when I was 17 years old. And I grew up in Venezuela in a very affluent, prestigious family, and they were socialites in the upper echelons of the Venezuelan society when Venezuela was the wealthiest country in South America, which is no longer the case. When I grew up, I was a very different kind of kid. I love fashion and I dress to the T. And today, as an elderly person or a senior citizen, I have matching hats to every one of my outfits. And I am extremely fastidious when it comes to my dressing. So much so that my wife says, "I feel so underdressed when I am around you," but we've been married for almost over 40 years, almost 50, and so she's used to that. So I grew up in a household that was extremely religious but dysfunctional. So I am a culturally Jewish. But I grew up also in a Judeo-Christian home, and I basically never questioned anything. And the higher power that I had were my parents. When I first moved to the United States, my father shamed me and told me, "Don't speak Spanish because you will be mistaken by Mexicans." And all he did was take his grievances against my mother to me, and I felt ashamed, and he changed my name. I was forced to change my name from Eduardo to Edward, and I went by Eddie. So I was that is really pretty impactful for a person who's 17 years old. So I grew up with a lot of shame. As a child, I was sort of a prodigy child. And the one thing my father did is he hired a tutor for me, and I find my way to protect myself from dysfunction. And I was physically abused emotionally, religiously, and sexually. And yet I live in white picket fences. So I tried to commit suicide when I was younger. So when I came to the States, I decided that as a child, my father knew I had a lot of talent academically. So I became an academic rock star. And I realized that the only way I can protect myself is to retreat myself to thinking. So I became an academic. And that was my go-to to either dissociate or try to understand the world around me. So given that background, I basically became pretty well known in my field, and I have a PhD degree in mathematics, and I'm also a biblical scholar. So the way I understand the world is through the world of science and mathematics. So therefore, I am not a person who believes in God. And I am a humanist and a rationalist. So how do I work this program? The trigger warning is that I mean no offense at all if you do believe in God or a higher power. That is a person's choice. We have 84 people in this Zoom meeting, and there's 84 different ways of working the program. So I had to work the program in a way that made sense to me. So in the big red book, I was looking at something in here on page 78. It says, we are free to use the word or words that fit us. And that was important to me because also in ACA, what I found something very, very comforting for me was the fact that, hold on a second, was the fact that, and I have it here in the big red book, the fact that says adult children who are atheists or agnostics who struggle with the notion of a universal force will hear their prayers and make meaningful impact in their lives. Many adult children concluded that a higher power did not exist. They thought God did not hear their prayers. For these ACA members, we asked them to keep an open mind. God, as we understand God, may have bundled up all such prayers from across the world and created ACA. So that gave me a lot of comfort. So one of the things I wanted to talk about was the solution, and how the solution has helped me so much. And one of the things that I need to say is, I'm very active in my meetings, and I used to feel sort of embarrassed that I'm an academic because I don't want to come across as being a jerk or that I know more than anybody. But I found that safety for me growing up was I need to become the smartest person in the room. That way I can protect myself. So when I read the solution, and I'm going to read it, it says the solution is to become your own loving parent. That sentence to me means that there is nothing, but recovery is really dependent upon my own efforts, not to expect someone to deliver me. As ACA becomes a safe place for you, you will find the freedom to express all the hurts and fears you've kept inside and to free yourself from the shame and blame that are carryovers from the past. You will become an adult who is imprisoned no longer by childhood reactions. You will recover the child within you, learning to accept and love yourself. When I deconstruct that sentence is an existential sentence that reminds me of the words, God is dead, from Friedrich Nietzsche, which is basically his interpretation that the only way one can recover oneself is to take responsibility for oneself because no one is going to come and deliver that experience for me. And that was my case growing up. I like to think that the rest of the solution, where there are mentions of God, it was probably, and I don't know this, but it was probably an effort to be as inclusive as possible. And so the 12-step program of recovery has been quite difficult for me because a lot of times I am asking myself, am I going into an echo chamber that sounds like a church? And the reason I say that is because in my experience, when I question things, I got the message that says, don't question us. To question is dangerous, and I realized that when I question, I upset the tribal balance. So my experience with the 12-step program, and I came from AA, is when I say I don't believe in something, people follow me after the meeting and want to engage in arguments, and I tell them I'm not interested in exchanging in having arguments. I can share with you my experience, and I don't want to feel like I'm in a church because I have a lot of religious trauma going on. So the next thing that I wanted to talk about is finding meaning in the words of recovery. And you know, when I look at the ACA program, and I'm very active in ACA, I go to meetings every day, I read the literature, but I don't read the literature literally. When I read the literature, I use my intellect and I realize that this is written by humans, and humans are fallible, and this is their opinion. And the Big Red Book has a lot of references. From an academic perspective, they're obsolete because anything that is more than 5 years old is really obsolete because there's new things that are coming up. So I look at the Big Red Book not as a divine book, the same as the AA book. I look at it basically as it's a guide for me to live my life the best way that I can. So when I talk about words, I have to remind myself of the following. I use words to express my thoughts and ideas. Only truth that is freed from the captivity of time and words and allowed to float in the sea of relativity will survive the ravages of subjectivity because words are subjective. Truth spoken through a human vehicle. I am sharing my truth through a human vehicle. It's me, my voice, my vibrations. It's often compromised by time, concept, vocabulary, history, and prejudice. I have all of those things. So my experience is really shaped by that growing up. Only truth that constantly helps me call out new words capable of bringing up or lifting yesterday's experience. I'm talking about the experience of Tony A, Bill W. Into today's mind, Fred. Will finally survive. That's what it does for me. And because I understand the world through a lens of chemistry, biology, philosophy, psychology, sociology, and philosophy, I can't really work this out with a higher power because I don't have any evidence that there is one. And in my experience, I was abandoned and abused to death. And so I lost hope in that. So, one thing that helps me, and I know that sometimes in 12-step programs, you know, we only read conference-approved literature. And I have problems with that because to me, that means that don't read anything outside of the guidelines because you're going to disrupt our agreement. And I'm a person who is an eclectic reader. I read a lot. I spend a lot of time reading and studying, and I'm retired. So, because that's how I like to spend my life. I'm a thinker. I was wired to think. And that I shouldn't make an excuse for that. That's just who I am. And one of the things that happened for me was Plato was one time asked, what surprised him most about people? And I know this is not conference-approved literature. And he said, well, you know, they get bored in childhood and then they want to hurry up and grow up, but then they miss their childhood. And so they lose their health to make money. And then
they pay money to regain their health, and then they worry about tomorrow and they forget about today. And in the end, they neither live today nor tomorrow, and they live as if they would never die, but then they died as if they would never live. And I got that. To me, that makes a lot of sense. And then, Socrates one time was asked, of course, he didn't speak English, it's in Greek. Socrates said, an unexamined life is not worth living. That's called the fourth step for me. An unexamined life is not worth living. And he shook the Athenian court when he provided that response. So that's what words mean to me. So what happened with ACA? I came from AA. And in AA, I introduced myself, I'm an alcoholic. I hear the words insanity. AA has a lot of links to religion, and I'm a biblical scholar, so I recognize it. Bill Wilson describes alcoholism by using the book of Revelation, and he calls the four horsemen of the apocalypse and describes alcohol like that. I happen to be an expert in the book of Revelation. I'm an expert. I travel to the Middle East to look at texts that were not included in that canon. So to me, when I look at that, I said, that doesn't work for me. So I am now adopting the words of saying, my name is Eduardo. I am human. And I am a member of this fellowship. But I am human. I need to honor my humanity. And part of being human is falling short and making mistakes. But growing up, I was expected to be perfect. No mistakes. Everything has to be done perfect. There was no wiggle room for humanity. So today, I am embracing my humanity. And I see my flaws as ways to learn and to repair myself and to hug myself. And tell myself, Eduardo, it's okay. I am with you all the time. The song Imagine by John Lennon has a lot of meaning for me. I listen to that song and I shed tears because that song describes how I feel. Imagine no heaven, no hell beneath us, nothing. Recovery is my responsibility as a grown adult. I need to take care of myself. So, what happened is in my family, I inherit a bundle of dysfunctionality. Who was my higher power growing up in Caracas, Venezuela? My parents. They told me what to say, what not to say, what to believe, what not to believe, what to dress up, what. I was basically on graph paper and they controlled my entire life. I couldn't do anything. I wrote a journal, a private journal, because I'm a very good writer. And my father discovered my journal and then he mocked it and made fun of it. And I was crushed. And to this day, I think about that and I feel so ashamed to have written that. And it's a conflict that I have. I don't have a relationship with my father anymore. My father continued to send me text messages. And I told my dad, if you continue to send me religious messages or messages related to my childhood, I'm going to have to block you. And then he replied in capital letters, very sarcastically, and by the way, the word sarcasm comes from Greek, sarcaso, and it means tearing of the flesh. That's really what it means. And then he told me, go ahead, block me in capital letters. So I did. So now I'm embracing a grieving journey because he is my biological father, and I don't have a relationship with him at the moment. It's not permanently closed, but for the time being. So in my family, I grew up in a, if you can imagine, a swimming pool. And that swimming pool had rules, regulations, how to address this, how to address that. I never saw my parents be affectionate. They never held hands. My mother was screaming most of the time growing up, breaking up china, and my father was quiet, so I thought that my father was the victim. When my parents divorced, I decided to go with my father, and I went from physical, emotional, and sexual abuse and pain to emotional pain, which is far greater than physical pain. If I had to choose between physical pain and emotional pain, I'll choose physical pain anytime. In fact, this is the first time, and I don't share this with a lot of people because I feel ashamed, because I feel ashamed somebody's going to pass judgment on me, say, how can an intelligent person like you, with your level of intellect, resort to cutting yourself? I cut myself as a way to deflect the emotional pain to physical pain. I did it, and I have not done that in a long time. I have a friend who's a psychologist, and I asked her one time, can I ask you a question? And she said, yes, Eduardo. I said, why do people cut themselves? And then she looked at me and she said, why are you asking me that? I mean, you're a professor of mathematics. What would you want? Oh, one of my students, I think, is I made up a fucking story, and she knew I was bullshitting her. And she said, people that cut themselves is because they don't have healthy coping mechanisms to deal with emotional pain. She described me. And I haven't done that in many, many years. So, what happened in this little swimming pool? I learned all the rules of engagement of how to live my life. ACA gave me the tool that I needed to leave the swimming pool. So the way I look at it is I have friends that are marine biologists, and I asked one of my friends, what do you think about Shamu? Shamu is that killer whale in San Diego, in California, and in Texas. The killer whale is kept in a pool, and my friend told me it's called animal cruelty. We can learn a lot about whales, but it's animal cruelty. And I go, what do you mean? He says they're atrophied. If you release the killer whales, the orcas, into the wild, they will die. I felt that I was being a Shamu of sort for my parents. I was performing tricks for them and for everybody else. And my school enforced that. My college enforced that. My doctoral programs enforced that. The workplace, they say you can innovate and ask questions, but don't shake the tribal balance of agreements. Don't shake it, because if you shake it, then you're either a blasphemer or a heretic, both of which have been labeled with, and that's okay. So I decided to live to get out of the swimming pool where Shamu is, and I went into the wild. I am a free orca now in the ocean, and I am exploring the depths of the beautiful blue ocean. And I meet other orcas, such as yourselves, from whom I can learn and ask, how do you navigate this? How do you go here? How do you go there? What do I do here? And I'm learning. And you know, the thing that happened to me when I decided to release myself into the wild was fear. I was afraid, terrified, mortified because I didn't have a set of instructions on how to do this. But the program helped me. It helped me navigate it. It helped me to trust myself. That's one of the promises, to be able to trust myself and to be a responsible adult and to take care of myself. I can't expect anybody to rescue me because it's not going to happen. So, what happened in that journey? I jumped into an abyss. That's what I did. And when I jumped into an abyss, I decided I have to survive. But I had atrophied emotional, healthy ways to cope with life. Those skills were atrophied, and I have to develop them. And I continue to develop those skills. That's what it has done for me, you know. And I like the program, and I'm so grateful to Tony A. You know, I always tell people, I encourage people that ask me, listen to that talk that Tony A delivered in Florida. You know, he talked about controversy in that talk. When he talked about it, because ACA was a breakoff of Al-Anon, and he was a member of AA, and I relate to Tony A because he was also Jewish and Christian, which is like my background. But I realized that he criticized the status quo. He disrupted the tribal balance of the 12 steps, and he wrote his own 12 steps. And then I reminded myself, Tony A took the words of Bill Wilson in the 1930s, and he was in the 1980s, and he created Tony A's 12 steps. And I'm pretty sure it caused a lot of controversy, and he did not want to be an authority figure, so he stepped down for quite some time. I spent a lot of time looking and reading about Tony A, and I'm very grateful for him. I wish I met him, but I never met him. I also realized that Tony A and Bill Wilson were not scientists. They were not. They were not philosophers. They were not theologians. None of that. Bill Wilson was a stockbroker, and Dr. Bob was a proctologist, which is applied medicine. It's not chemistry. It's not astrophysics. I'm sorry, it's not that. Tony A was not a scientist, but he wrote this in a language that made sense. So I worked the 12 steps using the yellow book. And you know, in the yellow book, I worked that, and the yellow book kind of, for me, it basically it evolved into because when I looked at the yellow book, it reminded me of it's the ACOA steps. So in the middle of working the program, I incorporated Tony A's 12 steps, and then I developed Eduardo's step. And I'm not proposing that we change anything. These are my steps. This is how I work my program. These are my words. In the yellow book, it says that for 18 years I am subjected to this dysfunction, and then they say, in the yellow book, it's about 160,000 hours of daily conditioning. I need to reprogram my brain. And then, of course, as a mathematician, I realize that it's not 160,000 hours. That's an overestimate. It's actually 157,788 hours. How do I undo something that is close to 160,000 hours to reparent myself? Recovery takes time. Today, I'm very happy because I've been working on this mathematical problem for 3 or 4 days. And after 7 pages and a lot of thinking and frustration, I cracked it. And I realized I'm learning something from this thinking. I'm learning to sit with my feelings. And sitting with feelings is pretty exponentially difficult, it's really hard. Because I used to numb that with booze or controlling people. So that's what happened with my experience with Tony A. So I wrote my 12 steps. So I'm going to tell you the meaning of the 12 steps for me. And I use the word I because I can't speak for other people. I can only speak for myself. So I wrote one, I admit that I am powerless over the effects of living with alcoholism and family dysfunction, and that my life has become unmanageable. Two, I have discovered through the process of dialectical thinking and metacognition that my ability to gain clarity comes from within myself. And I was reminded of the words in the New Testament that says, or even outside of the canon that says, the kingdom of God is within you. That's a clue that dismantles any kind of dependency on anyone. It comes from within me. Number three, I made a decision to practice self-love and to trust my intuition. Sitting with my feelings is one of them. Number four, I made a searching and blameless inventory of my parents because, in essence, I am just like them. Just like Tony A described, he was just like his father. Number five, I admitted to myself and to others who have earned my trust, I have trust issues, the exact nature of my childhood abandonment. Six, I am now ready to begin the healing process with the aid of at least one fellow traveler that I can share my experience. Number seven, I am now open and ready to begin the healing process with the aid of at least one trusted fellow traveler. Number eight, I have become willing to open and receive unconditional self-love. That reminds me of the solution is to love myself, to accept myself as I am. Number nine, I have become willing to accept my own unconditional love by understanding that self-love comes from within myself. It's a solution to reparent myself. Number 10, I continue to take personal inventory and to love and approve of myself by being gentle with myself while honoring my humanity. Because as a child, I was violated and discarded like a piece of trash. And yet I lived in an affluent home and I wanted to die. Number 11, through the practice of cognitive existentialism and humanistic reflection and introspection, I am improving my level of consciousness and relationship with my true self, the true nature of who I am as a human. Number 12, having had an awakening as a result of these steps, and for me, an awakening is enlightenment, it's not salvation. I took the word salvation and I decided I need enlightenment because religion, for me, is a massive psychological empire of control. Because in my experience, they're selling salvation and the marketing tool is guilt. And I cannot absorb that. It doesn't work for me. So, number 12, having had an awakening as a result of these steps, I will continue to heal myself and practice love, kindness, empathy, compassion, and to practice these principles in all my affairs and all my interactions. So, for me, it has been a huge journey. And because I choose to be authentic in myself, and this is a safe place, but outside of the rooms of recovery, it's a crazy world out there. And I'm learning that the radius of the circle of my friends is getting smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. So today, I am on a grief journey. I am grieving a lot. I'm grieving the loss of a connection with my father because my father is 85 years old, but he is a child that is still trying to cover up for his parents' issues and violence and all of this stuff. So I'm grieving the loss of friends that I can no longer be around them because being around them, they emanate vibrations that are toxic. And those vibrations, these are energy levels. You can't see them, but they're there. These vibrations are not congruous to my spirit. And what I learned in ACA is the only person, Eduardo, who's going to take care of you and who's going to protect you and love you is you. You can't expect anyone to do that. That is a job. It's my responsibility. So I'm trying to be a responsible adult. I want to say that, recently, about before the new year came, I celebrated 45 years of marriage. I've been married to this beautiful lady for 45 years. And I am very grateful for that. I also wanted to say that my relationship with my son and my wife, Cheryl, has been difficult at times. So I decided, upon her suggestion, which I resented it, of course, we've been together for so long, she knows where the buttons are to push them. And I don't mean that in a negative sense. I have a good relationship with this woman. I decided to go and see a psychometrician to, because my wife suspected that I was on the spectrum. Because she talked to another therapist and said, my husband is like, I don't know. And the person said, I think your husband either has Asperger's or is autistic or something. So I went and I did the test, and then I was diagnosed with autism, social anxiety disorder, and so I have that neurodivergence. And when I was a kid, and my parents would talk to me, the teachers would talk to me. When they talked to me, I did this. I closed my eyes. Because I was a person who thought carefully about everything, I was held in first grade. I carried that shame for my entire life. It said, you are a failure. Because my classmates advanced and I was held behind because I was a slow reader. And it wasn't that I was a slow reader, it was that I was deconstructing meaning. That's what it was. And I carried that shame for years. For so many years. And professionally, I became very accomplished. And I never felt I was good enough. I always felt like a failure. I always compared myself with others and I punished myself. I told myself I wasn't good enough. I still struggle with that to this day. I struggle. That's called trauma. I'm not a psychologist, but I think it's trauma. And the best way to deal with that is to feel all my feelings and to process my feelings. I work my program, and something I learned in the program was when I'm agitated, distressed, triggered, I do this. I breathe deeply because when I breathe, I have oxygen in my brain. And the brain is a soft tissue that has been programmed by my parents. But when I have oxygen, all those dendrites communicate electronically very smoothly, and it allows me to have a sense of clarity. So a lot of times I am breathing throughout the day when I'm triggered, because I get triggered about everything. So I just want to say that I'm very grateful to have had the opportunity to share with you my journey. And I am really hoping that whatever I say, just take what works. And I mean, I have to say this, I guess, in a way. I mean, no offense for my lack of beliefs and things and stuff. It's just me. I can't change me. I'm not Tony A. I'm not Bill W. I'm Eduardo. That's who I am. So thank you so much for the time, and thank you for giving me the space to share my journey with you. And I hope that maybe there was something that resonated with you. Thank you so much.